President Lula's comments come as pressures intensifying on the Biden administration to drop charges against Assange. A delegation of six Australian lawmakers has just arrived in Washington, D.C. to urge the U.S. to drop its case against Assange, who is an Australian citizen. Assange faces espionage and hacking charges that could see him sentenced to up to 175 years in prison for publishing classified U.S. military and diplomatic cables, including evidence of war crimes. Assange has been held in London's infamous Belmarsh prison since 2019, awaiting possible extradition to the U.S. Before that, he spent 7 years living in the cramped Ecuadorian embassy in London, where he had political asylum. In a moment, we'll be joined by an Australian senator who's just flown into Washington. But first, I want to turn to Colombian President Gustavo Petro. I spoke to him on Tuesday at Colombia's permanent mission here in New York, just after he addressed the U.N. General Assembly. President Lula also said at the UN General Assembly about Julian Assange, preserving press freedom is essential. A journalist like Julian Assange cannot be punished for informing society in a transparent and legitimate way. President Petro, do you think that Julian Assange, that the United States should drop charges against Julian Assange so he can be free?
Juliana, yo le digo Julian.
I call him Julian. Assange is a journalist, period. And what he did was the work of a journalist, period. And he's been in prison for a long time because of his work as a journalist. It's the greatest mockery of freedom of press. And it's been brought to bear by the country that built the concept. It was in the American Revolution, what they call the Founding Fathers here. They're the ones who said that there must be a press independent of power, of the powers that be. At that time, that was understood as the political power. Today, I would also talk about the economic powers, because the press has succumbed to economic power interests. But if we take this foundational concept of the United States, what they're doing with Assange is contradicting and denying their own foundational principle. The very government of the United States is doing this. And so it's a contradiction in terms. It's a contradiction in itself as a society. Assange should be free, and we have called for that. I have called for that. Lula has made it into a banner. Ecuador, when with a progressive president, was safeguarding him. His lawyers visit us sometimes, desperate. But if Biden has several messages to put out, in my opinion, I could not replace him because I don't know the U.S. society in depth. And I know that he is confronting very dark, backward-looking forces that date back a long time in the society. But Biden should take the leap of reforming the international financial system, the IMF, to reduce the public debts of all countries and free up budget space for a Marshall Plan for life. He can. He has that ability with Europe. Biden could, in this way, become the green leader, the environmental leader of the world. Look at all of the young people today who would like to have an opportunity to live in coming decades. And Biden could launch the message of democracy, lifting up the process. He could pardon him, what have you. The path to tell the world that a journalist doing their job as a journalist should not be kept prisoner, even if it has a negative interest, a negative impact on the interests of U.S. power, because it's the foundational aspect of that power. Well, the principle is that the press must operate independent of power. That would be sending a message to the world. I don't know how much it would be a message to its own society, but I believe that society itself has democratic defenses that would make it possible to recognize a great democratic leader.
That was Colombian President Gustavo Petro. We'll air the whole exclusive interview on Thursday on Democracy Now! Colombian President Petro and Brazilian President Lula's remarks supporting Julian Assange come as a delegation of six Australian lawmakers have arrived in Washington to urge the Biden administration to halt its prosecution of the WikiLeaks founder, who is an Australian citizen. More than 60 members of Australia's parliament from across the political spectrum recently wrote an open letter to the Biden administration. It appeared as a full-page ad in the Washington Post. The lawmakers wrote, quote, "We are resolutely of the view that the prosecution and incarceration of the Australian citizen Julian Assange must end." The letter goes on to state, "The prolonged pursuit of Mr. Assange wears away at the substantial foundation of regard and respect that Australians have for the justice system of the United States of America," unquote. Julian Assange has also received support from the highest levels of the Australian government. This is Australia's foreign minister, Penny Wong, speaking in July.
"We have made clear our view that Mr. Assange's case has dragged on for too long, and our desire that it be brought to a conclusion. And we've said that publicly, and you would anticipate that that reflects also the position we articulate in private."
We're joined now by the Australian Senator Peter Whish-Wilson. He's a member of the Australian Greens Party representing Tasmania. He co-founded the Bring Julian Assange Home parliamentary group nearly 5 years ago, just flew into Washington, D.C. last night. Senator, welcome to Democracy Now! If you can explain what you plan to do in Washington, D.C., and lay out what you see as Julian Assange's case.
Yeah, thanks, Amy. We've got a number of meetings with U.S. lawmakers, both in the Congress and in the Senate. We'll also be meeting with the Department of Justice, the State Department, with the Australian Consulate and Ambassador, and a number of other stakeholders, and, of course, doing media like I am now. The primary aim for our delegation, and it is cross-party, is to let Americans know, and particularly those in power, that Australians feel very strongly about this issue. We feel like Julian Assange has suffered enough. He's been incarcerated now in one form or another for nearly a decade for simply publishing the truth. He is an Australian citizen. He won the highest award for journalism in Australia. A number of Australian media outlets, as well as, of course, key US media outlets, have published articles around the WikiLeaks disclosures. And you know, we feel that his extradition process that's underway is a very dangerous global precedent for press freedoms. It's an extraterritorial overreach by the US government, and not something you would expect from, you know, the beacon of global democracy. It's with all respect to your listeners, it's something you might expect from a totalitarian regime. So the Australian recent polls in Australia have shown that 9 out of 10 Australians would like to see Julian Assange freed. They'd like to see him home for Christmas to sit down with his lovely wife, his two children, his brother and his father, like all of us, have a Christmas lunch with his family. And we'd like to make it very clear to US lawmakers that the Australian Parliament, who we represent across political parties, also feel very strongly that if the extradition proceedings continue, and especially if he is extradited to the US, increasingly our relationship will be seen through this prism, and one of frustration. I think it's fair to say that Australia is the closest of friends and the closest of allies with the US. And, of course, close friends and allies should have mutual respect. But we don't feel that the representations our government have made so far to the Biden administration have been listened to. We've certainly seen a disappointing response from Secretary Blinken when he was in Australia recently. So we felt like we had to jump on a plane and do 60 hours of travel to be here in Washington to meet face-to-face and look people in the eye and say, enough is enough. Julian needs to be freed.
Well, Senator, I wanted to ask you, when you started this campaign 5 years ago in the parliament, you were a lone voice There were only two of you. Now it's a quarter of the Australian Parliament. Could you talk about the evolution of the leadership's view in Australia and of the public's view in Australia about Julian's case?
Yeah, thank you. Look, it's a really good question. I met with Julian's father, John Shipton, nearly 5 years ago, and he only got two meetings with decision makers in the Australian Parliament, and I was one of them. I think it's fair to say that over the last decade, there's been a very concerted character assassination on Mr. Assange, and I think that there's a very deliberate strategy here to make him unpopular, because ultimately an extradition proceeding, especially on espionage charges, is a political charge. And we see Julian Assange as a political prisoner. But of course, if that would require a political solution to have the extradition proceedings dropped. And if he was unpopular and people didn't like him, then no one would pay any attention and the US government would be able to get away with this. So, 5 years ago, it's fair to say Julian was unpopular in Australia too. A number of people didn't want to engage on this issue. But as we've campaigned to get the facts out there around this specific details of the extradition, which relate to disclosures around the Iraq war, not to disclosures around the Swedish, any attempt for Julian to be sent to Sweden or anything to do with, the Cablegate disclosures with the US election. We've wanted to just get the facts in front of people that Julian is an Australian journalist, is a foreign journalist to your American listeners. It's the first time that the US government has tried to extradite a foreign journalist for activities on foreign soil. It's never happened before. And of course, if a democracy like the US can do this, they can bring a journalist and put them in jail for 175 years, and we don't believe he'll get a fair trial here in the US. What kind of precedent does that set for other nations? If a government who doesn't like what you've published and seeks your extradition and seeks to put you in jail to silence you, and to make let's be very clear about this, to make an example of you. And I think, the principle is a very simple one. And as we've put these facts in front of people, as we've had discussions across parliamentary lines, as we've talked to the Australian media, we've been able to actually put the details in front of people and they get it. They understand when you do that. So it has taken some time to build this momentum. I think the documentary about Julian's father, John Shipton, and his family, his brother Gabriel and others there. The very personalised film about their campaign to get Julian freed has helped humanise Julian, because as I said, he's had a very, very significant hatchet job done on his, he's been very deeply defamed on a number of levels, and I don't believe there was any basis to truth on that. So it's actually been about changing the frame. To actually look at what is this specific issue of extradition and what are the global consequences if he is extradited to the US.
And speaking of changing the frame, next month your Prime Minister Anthony Albanese is planning an official state visit to the United States and will meet with President Biden. How could Assange's extradition case potentially influence the discussions in that visit?
Well, I think it's very important that our Prime Minister does raise this again with US lawmakers, especially with the President. He has raised this both privately and, of course, it was raised at a press conference in Australia with your Secretary of State. And to be honest, it's one of the reasons we're here. We want to make sure as our parliamentary delegation meets with US lawmakers as we try and raise awareness of this issue amongst your listeners and other people in the United States, that our Prime Minister feels it is an important issue for them to discuss publicly. As I said earlier, this is becoming a big issue in Australia. We are the closest of friends, and while friends should be able to disagree, we see especially in the last 18 months since the Albanese government, our Prime Minister's Anthony Albanese, the Albanese government has becoming, you know, increasingly closer to the US, especially in defence and security ties. The Australian government's looking at appropriating, $500 billion to buy nuclear submarines from the US, for example. You know, as we become closer to the US, we feel there should be some quid pro quo here. Given we feel so strongly about this issue of Assange's release, that should be the minimum we get back from the Biden government.
What has the Prime Minister, Senator, what has the Prime Minister expressed so far to Biden, either publicly or privately? Is he demanding his freedom or him after he was extradited to the United States to be released to Australia?
He is, Amy. He said very clearly, similar to what you had there with Senator Wong, our foreign minister, he said he sees no purpose in the continuing incarceration or extradition of Julian Assange. He feels that enough is enough and it should come to an end. I think that's a very clear message. It is a different message to the last government. The Conservative government we had in Australia didn't say anything about Julian Assange. They didn't say anything negative about his extradition, but at the same time, they never made any public statements. So we have seen a sea change or a seismic shift in our leadership commenting on this issue, which we welcome, but we would like to see this backed up by action. Words are cheap. We would like to actually see the Prime Minister lay out to the US President and other power structures here within the US that there will be consequences if Julian Assange is extradited. We feel that's very important. To be very clear, as friends,
we have 10 seconds.
Have a very frank discussion.
Peter Wish-Wilson, I want to thank you for being with us. Has been an Australian Greens senator from Tasmania in the Australian federal parliament since 2012. He co-founded the Bring Julian Assange Home parliamentary group nearly 5 years ago. Next up, we speak with Indigenous leader Winona LaDuke. A Minnesota judge has thrown out criminal charges against her and two other water defenders arrested for protesting at the construction site of Enbridge's Line 3 pipeline. Back in 30 seconds. That was Water Protectors in 2021 singing Down to the River to Pray in Great River, Minnesota. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Here in New York City, protests continued Tuesday during Climate Week, and One Action Indigenous activists with Honor the Earth painted a giant mural in Times Square with the message, No Green Colonialism, Land Back Now. Indigenous activists were also at the front of Sunday's march of some 75,000 people to the United Nations calling on President Biden to end fossil fuels. This comes as a Minnesota judge has dismissed criminal charges against three Indigenous water protectors who were arrested after protesting at the construction site of Enbridge's Line 3 tar sands oil pipeline in January of 2021. The three women, Winona LaDuke, Tanya Obed, and Dawn Goodwin, were arrested after police saw video shared on social media of them at a Rally for River ceremony on the banks of the Mississippi River on treaty-ceded Anishinaabe land as they sang, danced, and prayed near construction crews.
Continue dancing in another really important location.
Well, in a landmark opinion delivered last Thursday, the Aiken County senior judge Leslie Metzen wrote, as respected members of Anishinaabe tribes, Leduc, Abed, and Goodwin were expressing, quote, their heartfelt belief that the waters of Minnesota need to be protected from damage that could result from the pipeline. Judge Metzen concluded, quote, in the interests of justice, the charges against these three individuals who are exercising their rights to free speech and to freely express their spiritual beliefs should be dismissed. To criminalize their behavior would be the crime, the judge said. For more, we're joined by Winona LaDuke, longtime Indigenous activist, author, and Ojibwe enrolled member of the Mississippi Band of Anishinaabeg, who lives and works on the White Earth Indian Reservation, founded the White Earth Land Recovery Project, her first novel, Last Standing Woman, republished this year in a 25th anniversary edition. She's joining us from the White Earth Reservation, Minnesota. Winona, welcome back to Democracy Now! I'm sorry I said those the names so badly.
Early in the morning,
if
Amy.
You can say
good
them,
morning.
If you could say them for
Anishinaabe.
Us.
Anishinaabe, Anin, and Dinoemagana to Kaloma relatives, Bonjour. Winukishika. It's Anishinaabe. Thanks for calling on me, and I'm glad to not be in jail.
Is so, can you
asking?
Talk about the judge's decision? Exactly what this means?
Well. You know, first of all, it was so significant. I cried when I read her decision because she refers specifically to not only our you know, right religious freedom, but also our treaties, because we're all members of the Mississippi Band and Anishinaabe, and our territory that we love and come from is right there. And in her decision, she says treaties between the United States and Anishinaabe have been signed regarding these lands. This court finds that it is within the furtherance of justice to protect the defendants peacefully protesting to protect the land and water on the land addressed in these treaties by dismissing this action against all defendants. So it was about, you know, our religious freedom, our freedom of assembly, our constitutional rights, but also recognizing our treaty rights, which is what we have been saying. These are our territories, and we have a right and responsibility to protect them. And I'm so grateful to the judge, but, you know, she was clear in her decision also saying that, you know, she just said, in the interest of justice, the phrase often and rarely applied to defendants, the less powerful and voiceless. For 40 years, she served on these courts. These cases particularly awakened in her. You know, she talked about the fact that growing up in Minnesota, you had a Cowboys and Indians education, and then you're supposed to adjudicate cases, you know. So this woman took the time and 40 years of experience in seeing Indian people come to the up to the bar time and time and time and time again, charged for being Indian, basically, for being Anishinaabe. She said something really profound, and she did the right thing. She brought justice, you know, and we appreciate her.
And Winona, could you comment on how the difference between how prosecutors in Minnesota treated you and the other free speech protesters versus how the Minnesota Attorney General, Keith Ellison, who prides himself supposedly as being a progressive, who was much more lenient with Enbridge, brought a single misdemeanor charge against them for breaching an aquifer, which was dismissed.
Right. And Enbridge breached four aquifers is what we know. The crimes committed by this corporation are egregious and ongoing. They have never been charged. The one case in Clearwater County, the first aquifer breach of four. In other words, we don't know, you know, there's no more water that they're making. And Enbridge is destroying and contaminating our water on an ongoing basis. There have been no charges brought for the other three aquifer breaches. And Enbridge negotiated kind of a hush settlement, like we'll deal with it and then we'll postpone it. Tens of thousands of people wrote to Attorney General Keith Ellison and asked him to drop the charges against people like me. I'm not a criminal, I'm a water protector. I'm an Anishinaabe woman who prayed by the river, danced, did my darndest to stop the pipeline, tried everything, and then had charges in three counties. Tens of thousands of people said drop the charges, and there are still people with felony charges that that need to have their charges dropped, and Enbridge needs to be charged because they are the criminals.
Let's talk about this. Nearly 1,000 people have been arrested at protests to stop Line 3 pipeline. While many charges were dismissed or settled, about 20 are still pending. A few weeks ago, we spoke with climate activist, water protector Mylène Viard, whose trial for peacefully protesting Enbridge Line 3 was about to start in Minnesota. She was about to testify that day. She was found guilty of felony obstruction for her role in trying to halt construction and faces a year and a day in prison for her 2021 protests when she attached herself to a 25-foot bamboo tower erected to block a pumping station in Aiken County. Viard, who lives in Colorado, had come to Minnesota to take part in this wave of indigenous-led acts of civil disobedience to stop the pipeline. When we spoke, I asked her about her concerns as she faced conviction and sentencing.
I wouldn't say that I'm afraid. I entered this fully aware of the risk I was taking and not really believing that the justice system in this court would be served, would be hearing me fully. So I am aware of what I'm risking, and I'm going there fully aware of the risk, but I'm not scared. I know where I stand. I know what my purpose is here. I'm grateful for you for hearing us today.
So that's water protector Mylène Viard. Winona, right after we spoke, she went into court and she testified. So she was found guilty and she faces a year in prison. Can you talk about her and the other people who are still waiting? And are they all before the same judge that acquitted you?
No, they are not. They are in front of a number of judges up north. And some may also be facing jury trials. We are facing a jury trial. And, you know, this is the deep north. I was hoping that people would go with our side with the jury trial. But, you know, you don't know up here. It's pretty racist. So having said that, you know, these people should not be charged. Enbridge is charging people with stealing time because they slowed down Enbridge. And so they had this time theft charge. I mean, the charges are ratcheted up. They were incentivized by Enbridge paying for the charge that the all of the police, $8.6 million. And some of the prosecutors were disappointed that Enbridge wouldn't pay for the prosecution, including Hubbard County, where, you know, we work and we're putting up our museum on treaty rights and culture. But, you know, having said that, it's a shame what is going on in the north. It's a shame to Minnesota. And it's, you know, what it shows is, you know, the planet is facing climate chaos. And here they are justifying and defending a Canadian pipeline company that imports 75% of the tar sands into the U.S. and is trying to put a pipeline across the Straits of Mackinac, redo one. You know, late stage addiction behavior is bad and we need to sober up and we need to protect the water and the human rights of people and the animals and not the Canadian Pipeline Corporation. So I plan to speak up and help support other folks, and we are hoping that what the judge ruled here will help the others because, you know, we tried everything to stop this company, and none of us want to be arrested, but I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not a criminal in Enbridge.
And Winona, we only have about 20 seconds, but the protesters at the UN General Assembly went to Times Square with a big mural, "No Green Colonialism, Land Back Now." What are you hoping to see from the Biden administration?
Well, we want the Tamarack mine stopped as well as the mine out in Nevada, Thacker Pass, but they're looking at trading our sacred Sandy Lake where our people died by the hundreds, our sacred lake for a Tesla mine. And we need to quit. What we need to do is reduce our consumption, get efficient, and not try to pretend that, you know, some new green colonialism is going to change things. There are many choices, like infrastructure for people, not for pipeline companies, and not for Elon Musk. And that's what we want. We want to protect the water. Thank you so much for taking a look at us in Minnesota, fifth of the world's water. It's worth protecting, and certainly we are not criminals.
Winona LaDuke, longtime Indigenous activist and author who lives and works on the White Earth Indian Reservation, founded the White Earth Land Recovery Project. Her first novel, Last Standing Woman, republished in a 25th anniversary edition. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Indulge yourself in the cultural and folklore traditions of Italy on Il Sole Italiano every Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m.
Eravamo ancor fanciulli e ogni sera su quel prato.
Join me, Robin, every Friday at noon for Roots and Berries. Tune in to hear bluegrass, old-time music, and other rootsy little nuggets with a focus on Canadian players, singers, and pickers. That's Roots and Berries, Fridays over the noon hour, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM.